Brilliance Audio presents The King of Bones and Ashes by J.D. Horn, performed by Sophie Amos. Alice strained against the weight of the ancient powder blue suitcase, its metal hinges cutting a shallow vein into the hardwood floor as she dragged it backward down the hall with a two-handed, white-knuckle grip. Inside the case, she had crowded every treasure she'd collected in her 7.5 years. Books and dolls, a battered music box, and a contraband cache of costume jewelry she wasn't allowed to wear outside the house, purchased at the French market, though her imagination insisted it had been plundered from a pirate chest. In the center of the booty, bound by a heavy silver frame, she had secreted a picture she usually kept hidden in the false door of the dollhouse her Uncle Vincent had built for her. She loved the photo, not only because it was the sole portrait she knew to exist of her immediate family, her father and her mother, and both older brothers, Luke and Hugo, but also because her mother's gaze wasn't turned toward the camera. It rested on a miniature, an only somewhat recognizable version of Alice herself, balanced between her father's hands on his knee. Her mother's hand rested on baby Alice's tiny leg. Alice couldn't remember her mother. "Are you ready then, love?" Daniel asked, materializing before her, hovering an inch or so above the stairhead. Alice couldn't bring herself to look him in the eye, focusing instead on the tan-brimmed cap that covered most of his red hair, then on the stained and dirty blues and greens and pinks of the petty point flowers embroidered on his suspenders. Daniel was bound to their house. There'd be no escape for him. Her father had promised her that Daniel would be all right, that he'd find a way to protect him, no matter what. But her father had also promised to keep her safe, to keep the whole of New Orleans safe. Just hours ago, they'd all been so proud, so relieved. Her father's house had held a party atmosphere, with 30 or more weary, bedraggled witches cheering and congratulating each other on how deftly the Chanticleer Coven had coordinated the efforts of witches all around the city to divert Katrina. The storm should have hit the city dead on, but they, the brave witches of the Crescent City, had managed to slow its winds and nudge it just a bit east, far enough that the storm's path would cut through less populated areas. A case of champagne still sat on the kitchen counter, placed there in anticipation of the toasts they'd enjoy after besting Katrina, and, from the witches older than her father, duller reminiscence of having weathered Betsy before her. But Pontchartrain had pushed its way beyond its banks, and the levees had failed. Her father always kept his word, except when he didn't.